A little clingy.
Bear down, Bears fans.
Bear down.
We're starting it off right, a little clingy.
Don't forget to subscribe. Hit that button. Have a good time. Like, subscribe.
Nothing like the shirt when you start off clinging to your little bit.
Yeah, it's clinging already.
Yeah, I'm like, a little push-up action. That's what I'm working on. I just started a 10-day cleanse, good kid. So I'm trying to get back in the right direction.
I'm going to start it after my sandwich from Popbelly's today.
What'd you get on the Sammy?
I just got a meatball sandwich.
I
got a little seasoning and a little bit of marinara, but not a lot. A little bit of marinara.
I will vicariously enjoy the sandwich through you because I am trying my best to eat right. But today's episode, I want to talk about the highs and the lows. You've seen a lot throughout your illustrious career, of course, playing, being an analyst of the game. I want to talk about some of the things that turned you into a Bears fan that you saw during your career, maybe some of the things that you've seen since your career has ended as a NFL player. All that and more in today's episode of the Chicago Bears Podcast. Hit the like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Want to know one thing from you, good kid. Your best Chicago Bears childhood memory.
Well, I mean, the Bears stunk when I was a kid. So the best childhood memory was probably watching Sweetness, Walter Payton run. When he joined the club, he made the Pro Bowl. He introduced himself. He called himself Sweetness. And watching him run, I mean, back then there was nothing going on. You didn't have 1,000 channels. Yeah. You had 3-4 channels that you kind of watched. So the Bears game on Sunday was an absolute must. And, I caught that game against the Minnesota Vikings when he rushed for all that yardage. I thought nobody was ever going to stop him. It was great. But I became a Bear fan at about 8 years old.
Yeah.
And I think Gary Huff, Mike Phipps, Bobby Douglas were the quarterbacks, and the Bears were terrible. Terrible.
Not a lot of greats to remember.
We had Virgil Ivers, 24, as one of your corners. Alan Ellis was another corner. Your safeties back then were still Fensick and Doug Plank. We had Jerry Muckenstern at linebacker. Dougie Buffon was still there. Jim Osborne, Wally Chambers were on a defensive line. A young Mike Hartenstein was on that defensive line, I believe. Now you're getting into 76 and 77. So you loved them. They made the playoffs the 1 year. They lost to Philadelphia. Walter breaks a big run down the right sideline, an 80-yard touchdown run. Somebody gets called for a hold. I mean, it was brutal. It was brutal. And the only thing you really had to cheer in the late 70s was the defense and the way the defense played and what Doug Plank would do to Jimmy Giles when Tampa finally got into the lake. I mean, Doug Plank, Jimmy Giles would be going deep down the middle and Doug Plank would just go and haul off and hit his head. I mean, now it'd be 15 and they'd probably eject him out of the game.
Yeah, yeah. But different time.
Back then that was allowed. So, you watched the defense play a ton. That's what we did. Because they were the story. The defense could play well, and usually we beat the hell out of the other team, and then next week they'd go out and they'd find a way to lose because they played against the Bears. So, I mean, that was my Bear fandom. It was Walter Payton, and that was about it. And then every blue moon they'd hit, and then, they had James Scott. They had Ricky Watts. Greg Latta was our tight end. And, that Peyton run against Kansas City where he bounced off 9-10 people.
It's one of my favorite runs of all time to see. I'm not going to lie.
My worst moment as a Bears fan as a youth was when they're going to hold the Packers to a field goal. They block the field goal, and then the ball lands in Chester and Markle's hand. I think it was overtime, and Chester Markle ran it in for a touchdown. So you went from blocking the field goal to it popping into this four-eyed figure of a kicker and him running around the left side, running at him for a touchdown.
Was he a glasses wearing kicker?
Yeah, he wore glasses. Just remarkable. So that was my worst memory as a child. You were jumping for joy for half a second. And then you're like, how in the blank did this just happen to us? So
why are so many of bad Bears memories for fans field goal involved?
I don't know. Like
is that our curse?
Yeah.
We have to lose on field goals.
But then once 85 came, I was a freshman in college for that 85 campaign, and the Bears went to the Super Bowl in January 86. So all that fandom you had as a youth ended up working out because in 85 it all came together. And, in the early 80s, you watched them start to piece some things together. You saw the 83 draft that had all these players that eventually would become starters and were studs, Jimbo Covert, Dent, Mark Bortz, Willie Gault, a lot of guys taken in that 83 draft that ended up becoming players. So I think Otis Wilson was taken the year before.
It was a couple of solid drafts.
Jim McMahon was taken.
Yeah.
So you were starting to head in the right direction. They bought Coach Ditka back. Ditka cleaned out Noah Jackson, Reeve Sori, Dan Neal, Ted Albrecht, all those guys, Dennis Lick. And he redid that offensive line to become one of the most dominant offensive lines in the NFL at the time. So, I mean, it was great to be a Bears fan, but then it was very frustrating at the same breath because you had a great team and all you did was crap the bed in the playoffs. Yeah. After the 86 season, you crapped the bed. 87, you crapped the bed. 88, you crapped the bed. Then you let go of Wilbur Marshall for some crazy reason. You make a bid on Ray Childress without paying the people that were successful for you. So it wasn't making any sense. It was almost like, hey, we're going to do this just to spite you guys. And then in 89, they had a 5-11 season. It was horrific. It was a terrible, terrible season. They bounced back in 90, another bad one in 91, and the next year, you know, Ditka's gone.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the history of the Bears for me in my lifetime. Very frustrating.
It hasn't changed
much. No, it's very frustrating.
It hasn't changed much. When I go through my childhood, it's basically the same stories.
You had the 1 year.
Had the pop-up year in 06.
You had the 1 year.
And that's all I've got.
And Rex Grossman being the quarterback on that team never made any sense. I thought
Rex Grossman is our quarterback.
I thought the backup was better and Kyle needed Orton to be in there. Yeah.
I mean, Kyle Orton.
Kyle Orton or Greasy, whoever it was at the time.
Both,
I'm trying to remember.
Both of them. I swear, both of them could have won that game.
Well,
the lanes they were giving Rex in that game to run, it was like just – and I know it wasn't the norm.
Yeah, Rex
He wasn't mobile.
He's not a runner. Just handle the snap.
Handle the snap.
Is the moment too big for
him? Wasn't he too gloving it in that Super Bowl?
I don't know what he was doing. It was damp. It was Miami.
It was a little moist.
They had a solid drizzle coming down the whole game. Purple rain, you know.
Purple rain? That's Minnesota. That's Minnesota. Oh, I know.
Prince did the halftime entertainment.
Oh, that's right.
Right. Oh. Yeah. Then he came out and the first song was Purple Rain.
Yeah. That's a good call, my friend. Prince, phenomenal. Big Prince guy?
Oh, yeah. Back in the day, absolutely. Little red Corvette.
Oh, hey, now.
Actually, the one with Sheena Easton that he sang, You Got the Look.
Yeah.
You got the look.
Oh, watch that.
Must have taken a whole to the man of your baby. You got the look. Yeah, that's one of my
back to back weeks with Yerk where we got some music singing on this show. That's what we do, man.
Yeah, but no, that was the highlight of that Super Bowl if you're a Bears fan. It wasn't Daniel Manning falling asleep and taking the bite on the tight end as Reggie Wayne ran behind him.
Devin Hester opening kickoff is my highlight. That's it.
Sure,
it was downhill from there.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you what it wasn't. I know it wasn't a drop snaps.
Yeah.
You know, Cedric Benson, I think, got beat up in that game a little bit.
Got
an MCL. So
it was not the finish that we had hoped for.
I mean, if that's memories you want, the memories you got.
I'll say this. It's not memories I want, but it's what I got. That's all I got. What was the moment growing up that made you realize you were a elite athlete?
Oh boy, that's a little bit difficult. I was getting I was an undersized offensive defensive lineman in high school. So as a freshman, I probably weighed about 200 pounds. As a sophomore, I was about 217, and as a senior, I was just about 230, 235 pounds. So, but I was good. I mean, I could play football, and I understood football. Football came naturally to me. And I was an offensive lineman / defensive lineman. I made both the All-State team in the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times, the Champaign News-Gazette, and something down in St. Louis, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or something like that. So I was a good player. I was recognized as being a good player, so I knew I was, but I wasn't getting any college opportunities because I only weighed 235 pounds, and I was about 6'2". You know, so 6'2", 235 doesn't really instill a ton of confidence in Big Ten coaches to come on down for a guy that's either a lineman or a defensive lineman or a whatchamacallit. But, I mean, they didn't see. They couldn't tell.
Right.
I mean, it was one of the two. They didn't take the time to check me out. One of the things I got was a story from a guy that was at Ball State, and I saw him at Carolina. When the Carolina Panthers were in the Super Bowl at Houston, Texas, we were down there for media day, and I sat with one of my old coaches, coached the offensive line with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I went up and said hi to him, gave him a hug. He introduced me to this guy, and the guy goes, I got to tell you a story. Sorry. He goes, I was a recruiting coordinator slash defensive line coach at Ball State University when you were a senior, 1984. He says, we got season going. We got this going. He goes, I got a wife and two kids at home. Coach comes to me and says, hey, you need to cut that list from 400 to 200 tonight. He goes, I'm overworked. I'm exhausted. I got a wife and two kids that want to know what the hell's going on. Where am I at? I just get handed this at 5 o'clock. It's going to take me 2-3 hours. He goes, I remember it like it was yesterday. I saw you. I saw your height. I saw your weight. Whoosh. Scratch me off the list. Ball State's recruiting list. Because
of height and weight. Yeah.
Height and weight. So it's the easiest way to trim it down is if he ain't got the height, he ain't got the weight, it doesn't make a difference because nobody had an accurate time on anybody in the 40.
Right.
So all it was height, weight, 6'1" and a half, 6'2", say 235. Not big enough. We don't think he's going to be big enough. Guy never saw me, ever. He had me on the recruiting list. He just took me off, period, because of that. So, you know, I got that story. He goes, thank God it worked out for you. That's what he said. Thank God it got worked out for you. Now
he Eddie Murphy'd you with Don Rickles. He's like, who knew? Yeah,
exactly. But Eastern Illinois came up and they recruited me and they said instantaneously, listen, we love you. They brought me down for a visit. We're offering you a scholarship. We want you to come to Eastern Illinois University. I had some flirtations with Purdue, but they weren't serious flirtations.
No.
They're just flirtations. And so I ended up, you know, it was decision day. I had to figure it out. I called Joel Swisher, who was the offensive line coach. I said, hey, I'm coming to Eastern Illinois. He goes, you guys come up. He goes, you want to do it to school? I said, my house is fine. Gave him the address. They showed up. I signed a scholarship. That morning, I called Mr. Munda, who was my coach. I said, I signed with Eastern Illinois this morning. They came to the whatchamacallit. And then it was a done deal. Then I went there and played. And one thing my offensive line coach in high school, Billy Cammer, told me, he goes, don't think you're going here. It's a 1AA school, and you're just going to go over there and start mopping these motherfuckers up because these guys can play.
Yeah,
he goes, they won a national championship in Division II. They've got some nice little, they got a nice program down there. He goes, everybody wants to play, and they're going to want to beat your ass at the beginning because you're a young kid. Blah blah blah. I get it. Don't take it for granted. Don't think you're just going to show up and get things. Make sure you work the whole offseason. I got it. I went down there, and they had planned on making me an offensive lineman. Defensive lineman. They were going to go D-line. They tried me out of D-line, and they're like, okay, that's great, but they had depth. So they're going to switch me to an offensive lineman. I was going to redshirt the year. We go to Southern Illinois, and two of our guys, Johnny Borchert, who was out of Florida, came from a junior college out there. He got hurt, blew his ACL out, and Dave Lewandowski, Sweet Lou, out of Fenwick. He ends up getting hurt. So before the Kansas game, we're going out to the Lawrence, Kansas to play them. Parents weekend,
right?
Homecoming,
right? You know,
something where they get themselves an easy victory. Remember, Sean Payton was our quarterback. We 100%. Had Roy Banks, who was drafted in the fourth round with the Buffalo Bills. They call me and they say, listen, you're gonna play whether you like it or not. We need you. He goes, but if we take you off a red shirt, you're gonna play. So telling me that, okay, we're going to pull you off, but now we're going to depend upon you to get out there.
Every week.
Be too big for you. The moment can't be too big. So we go out to Kansas. And it's great. It's my first trip, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was plane. I think it was a plane ride. No, we bus to Kansas, I think.
For me,
I'm trying to remember.
To Kansas,
yeah.
You bust.
We might have bus to Kansas. No, I think we took a plane. We were busing when we were around there to go get something to eat and stuff like that. So we go there. My first play they put me in is not even a defensive plan. I'm up back on a fake punt. 4th and 3. I get in a report eligible because I'm off the line of scrimmage.
Right.
And I got to pull up on All-American linebacker Willie Pless. Willie didn't play in the NFL, but he played in Canada for a number of years. So I come in. I just try to saw him right in half, you know. The snap goes to Bobby Bruno, who was out of Rantoul. I forget who was next to me. He kicked out on the man, trapped him. I pulled up and ended up getting the linebacker, and I just saw him through the thighs. We ended up getting the first down.
Hey,
we had a 13-12 lead at halftime against Kansas on Parents Weekend, and Norseth was the quarterback. They had a wide receiver that was going to go play in the NFL, and Gossett. Remember Mike Gossett that was on ESPN? Mike Gossett was their head football coach at the time. So they come out and after halftime and they say, we're going to run the ball. And then they ended up beating us like 42 to 19. We scored another touchdown, but they picked it up, put it down. My first defensive play, sack.
Hey, that's sack. What I'm talking about.
Second defensive play, to try to run a reverse, I forced the fumble. And I come to the sideline, and we had a guy out of California, Daryl Walls. He looked like the Soul Glow guy. You know, he
had just so let your soul glow.
D Walls came down the night. I never seen a man that wanted to be naked more than Daryl Walls. Daryl Walls used to walk around the locker room naked. You know, we had the Soul Glow hair.
Yeah.
He had himself a sausage down there. And he knew what he was doing. He just swinging that thing left to right. Boom. Yeah. It looked like a grandfather clock, you know, the pendulum that sits down, goes boom, boom. That's what it looked like. Like you detach somebody's retina if you got too close to that fucking guy. But our guy, Daryl Walls, was on the sideline. He comes to me, goes, motherfucker, you're balling. You're balling, motherfucker. And I'm like, thank you, man. Shit was happening so fast. You know, I'm just going forward. And then they figured out at some point, we could just trap this kid. He's just like a bull in the china shop. And eventually they did. All of a sudden, I'm getting an ear old. That slowed you down real quick.
Yeah.
But D Walls, man, we used to love Daryl Walls. A good man. Good man. Out of California. We did a lot of recruiting in California and Florida when we were looking for JC, junior college transfers.
Yeah.
Triton Community College, Thornton Community College right here in beautiful South Holland. We pulled some players out of there, too. And when we went the high school route, we did a lot of Detroit. Roy Banks and Daddy-O Dwayne Pitts came out of Detroit. And we did a lot of Indianapolis and St. Louis were our, like, in Chicago. Those were our municipalities. But needless to say, all the best players, usually, you know, they're going to Notre Dame. They're going to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They're going to Iowa. They're going to Northern Illinois.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to the MAC or they're going to the Big Ten.
Back when NIU was a player.
We had guys that were flying out to UCLA. Frank Cornish Jr., his dad played in the NFL. Frank Cornish Jr. Was out of Mount Carmel. He went to UCLA. Mikey Miller went to Northern Illinois. So a lot of guys that were good players. Wade Kuzikowski went to Ball State to play football.
Right.
A lot of good players that you knew growing up, you know, were flying out and going to all the MAC schools and going to all the Big Ten schools. So, you know, we get what we can get. You know, and then we had to, at Eastern, we had to find players that could develop. And then you had to have coaches that could develop players.
Yeah.
So you're getting a rough piece of a diamond in, and then the coaches had to sit around it and shape it and, you know, put a polish on it, make it look good. And then the player had to be responsive in the same breath to be able to take some instruction and be able to play.
Love it. I love the fact.
I spin yarns all day about football.
Fact that EIU has so many phenomenal players that have come out of it to actually make an impact in the NFL.
We got guys in the league now. I don't even know half the guys that are in the league. We had a linebacker up in New England that won himself a championship, I think.
You're in the Hall of Fame up there, aren't you?
Who?
Aren't you in the EIU Hall of Fame?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Flex on them, good kid.
Yeah, I'm a lock. I'm down there.
I love it. What was your plan way to EIU?
I enjoyed the time. 260 when I started.
Okay, you had it.
When I was a senior, I was 280.
Oh, yeah. So
I got 25 good pounds in between my senior high school, working out in the summer, getting into training camp. I had good, I had a good weight loss there.
Yeah.
I mean, weight gain. Muscle. Then we started there. I mean, I can only bench 315, but I can incline about 295. So my bench, my incline were damn near together. And then the legs, you know, I always squatted and I always leg pressed and I always did everything. But it's just different when you're 18 years old, not 17 when I went to camp.
Right.
So, and I had my 18th birthday in the middle of camp, August 18th. So right in the middle of training camp before the school season started, I turned 18. And then my freshman year is 18. Well, when you're 18 and you're 22.
Yeah.
And guess what? This world of difference.
Yeah,
there's a lot of physical maturity happening in the body. And coaches can't see that. Coaches aren't patient enough. Coaches now with the NIL, not the NIL, with the portal. Well, why would
they don't have time?
Why am I going to wait for this kid to develop when I can just go pluck this guy out?
Yep.
That looks like he's finally figured it out. So I think it's a little unfair for high school students nowadays 100%. The way it's going. Yeah.
Who did I see? Somebody was talking about it. the head coach of Illinois, I think, was on. He was on some show. And
Brett Bielema.
Yes. And he was talking about where it used to be you had to develop these young guys. You had to develop the freshmen. You had to develop your sophomores because you were going to rely on your sophomores. Now everybody's looking for the guys who are the 3 and 4 year guys.
Right.
Hey, you went over there and you guys didn't win. Right. The guy the Bulls took yesterday, Marcus Damask.
Yeah.
He was a 5th year senior.
Yeah.
Because he spent 4 years in Southern Illinois, developed his game, and then, you know, they're like, come on in.
And they just picked him up as a free agent.
Yeah.
Right? They
signed him pretty much. Yeah. And the Bulls just signed him as a undrafted free agent.
Eastern Illinois lost 2 good football players this year. You know, obviously some say, hey, Eastern's pretty good. Look at him, huh? You know, they're making waves. They almost made the playoffs this year. Well, who are their great players? Well, let's pick them off. Let's get them up here because they'll be better than the guys that we're going to bring in as freshmen.
Yeah.
And then they go about the business of just doing that all the time. So it's unfortunate even for us at Eastern Illinois that that happens. I had a question within my group about 19 guys that I went to college with, some guys with me, some guys a little bit younger than me. And the question was posed to me by one of my guys, would I have left in NIL? And I said, listen, I had a chance to leave. When Al Moldy went to Western Michigan, he took the whole staff with him. Billy Blade by, Swisher went with him, Sheldon Hurd, Dana Chambers, all the coaches that were with us. They said, hey, and I had just torn my ACL in spring ball, but they came to see the spring game because they're still living there while they're in transit, right, while they're trying to move. And they said, listen, we got a spot for you up there because you're hurt anyway. He goes, you can redshirt your year and boom, you'll be up there at Western Michigan with us playing the MAC. So I had the offer. I could have gone. I was hurt. I was going to sit out a year anyway. It wouldn't have bothered me any, except, and this is what I tried to tell the guys, I came in with a freshman class of some badasses, Daryl Holcomb out of Florida, R.L. Reynolds out of Detroit, Jeffrey Mills from New Trier, George Boykin, Munda, Brent Fisher out of Quincy. I'm missing a ton of guys, but I came in with a lot of badasses, and a lot of us played young. And, you know, you don't make a commitment to people and the guys, and you don't sweat, and you don't, you know, go through the work, and you go through the crap, and all of a sudden just abandon them. That's not the way it works.
Yeah.
At least that's not the way I was brought up.
It's not the way it worked back then.
I made a commitment to Eastern Illinois. I was going to go to Eastern Illinois, and I was going to finish at Eastern Illinois, no matter what the theoretical temptations were. And I told them, thank you. I said, I appreciate it. You're right. I am going to sit out a year. I said, but I like my guys. My guys are good guys. We got a good group, and I think this good group is going to be able to propel us forward and have some fun. So. And it did.
It did.
And we had good guys and we had good players. And, you know, we made the playoffs my senior year. We beat John Freese in Idaho. And then we went to Montana, lost to Montana. They had 3 NFL players on that team. Timmy Houck, Kirk Scrafford played tackle for the 49ers. Timmy Houck played 14 years in the league as a special teams guy. And then they had another guy, Pollock or something, that was a guard. So they had 2 offensive linemen that played in the NFL. I mean, that's absolutely crazy for a school like Montana. So, you know, we went to the playoffs. We made a little bit of noise. So we had some fun. We ended up losing. And then, boom, that's the way it is. But I love my college career. Eastern Illinois is a great university if you've never been there. It's far enough from Chicago to be far enough from Chicago where you can't just go back.
Right.
You got to make a decision if you're going to go home. So, and once I went down there at the beginning of August, I was there until – God, Christmas, because we were in the playoffs. In my senior year, I played in the blue-gray game, which doesn't exist anymore. And that's when you get a chance to kind of measure yourself up against other players who didn't make bowl games, which is the caveat. But like Stepnoski was there from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
The Goose was there. There were some nice guys down there, so it wasn't bad.
Never a bad thing. When you get to the league, who was the lineman that gave you the most difficulty?
Oh, God.
Who was the lineman that you were able to throw around the easiest?
Well, there were 3 of them. Larry Allen from Dallas was tough.
The stories of Larry Allen are phenomenal.
Dermonti Dawson from Pittsburgh to center, and Randall McDaniel. 64 left guard 63 center, and I think Larry was 74, if I'm not mistaken. Larry Allen?
Yeah.
Maybe 73. I don't know. He moved fast, like streak lightning with power.
Was the was punch everything that people have said about it?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he was solid. I mean, listen, he didn't win every play.
Yeah.
But he wasn't going anywhere. He was going to stick around, and he's going to be there all day, and you had to be ready to battle him all day. You know, and then, you know, it wasn't just Larry. They had Eric Williams over there.
They had a line. Yeah.
Stepnoski, when Stepnoski left to go to, I think he went to Houston or something like that to play there, and then ended up with the Tennessee Titans when they moved. They had Nate Newton on that line. You know, they had Dale Hallstray, who would come in and substitute a little bit when they needed him. Derek Kennard was on that line. Mark Tuane was on that line. Kevin Gogan was on that line. Just guys who were switching in for the 3-4 years that I ended up playing them. But, you know, Dermani at the end, I figured Dermani out. Dermani was quick as lightning and get position on you. You'd panic, make a mistake, and then all of a sudden he made you look like a fool. So Dermani, you just had to play him heavy.
Right.
Play Dermani heavy, get him into the backfield, keep your head up, and feel what's happening because Bettis might just cut back on you. Bettis was going to do whatever Bettis wanted to do back there. So, you know, you had to be cognizant. And early on, it was Cordell Stewart was their quarterback. Neil O'Donnell first, then Cordell Stewart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was in Jayville, we had a lot of Cordell Stewart. When I was in Green Bay, we played him twice. Pittsburgh.
In Jacksonville? Green Bay.
And we used to play him every 3 years. So I think we had him in 92 and 95. So, but we saw a lot, you know, a lot of the bus. And the bus was with L.A. He was with the Rams before he got to Pittsburgh. For one reason, the L.A. Rams let him go.
They still don't know why.
Yeah, you're trying to figure it out. Sometimes you scratch your head. For a while, the Rams were like Notre Dame light. They had Pat Terrell, that Todd Light. It looked like they were trying to get every guy that ever played for Notre Dame out there. Frank Stams. Frank Stams in the place that you live. Bum, bum. So, you know, that's what it looked like out there. But, yeah, those three offensive linemen were the toughest guys to end up going against. And I once got in a game in Green Bay 3 holding calls on Randall McDaniel. He held me 3 times.
How'd you pull that off?
A bad day.
How'd you pull that off?
I don't know, but sometimes he looked disinterested. I wouldn't say a word to him. I would never want him to get upset. Because if he got upset and he got motivated, it was a problem. You know, when you're that good, sometimes you can just go through emotions a little bit and still be somewhat of a dominant player. So if I was getting the better of him, shut your mouth, don't celebrate, hide in the huddle, and pretend like he doesn't think it's you.
You weren't the Kevin Garnett of the Packers out there.
No. I kept my mouth shut. I was smart enough to keep my mouth shut. And who'd I toss around? I never really tossed anybody around. I had success against Oakland. Why I had success against Oakland, I have no idea. Or the L.A. Raiders at the time. They were a little bit of both. In 96, I played out there. In Oakland, Alameda County Stadium, when the water didn't work, and we all got on our plane stinky after losing. And then I played them when they were the L.A. Raiders at the end of 93. I had 9.5 sacks in my career. 3.5 came against the Oakland Raiders. And Steve Wisniewski was the guy that I was going over sometime. You know, two and a half of them. I don't know why, but it worked out for me. And Wisniewski was a hell of a player out of Penn State. I think he's got a kid or a nephew playing now. In the league, but I don't know why. And that, again, just success getting to the quarterback. Maybe it was the field conditions that day. Maybe whatever. That was a 0-degree game.
You never had a guy you felt like, oh, I'm coming in on Sunday. I know I got his number.
Nah, because it's the NFL.
Yeah,
and you got a ball. Yeah. I'll tell you, one Sean Jones knew he had Willie Rolfe. Sean Jones always played well against Willie Rolfe. He goes, I bet you I get 2 sacks today. And I'll be hot damned if we didn't go down there and he had 2 sacks against Willie Rolfe. And Willie Rolfe's a Hall of Famer. But Sean Jones, for one reason or another, whatever he did and whatever technique he utilized, he got him. I didn't have anybody. Them guys that were in the league, you battled, you tried to get after him, you tried to go. I had one game where I was got off on the first corner and finished with 9 tackles and a pressure that led to ultimately what we were going to get as a victory. And Wade Wilson was the quarterback. But if you saw me in the first quarter flying out of there, hell-bent for election, the coach looking at me, he goes, you're creating a hole. He goes, your backside 3 technique didn't help you, but you need to be more stout. You need to stop. He goes, where the hell are you going? So after the first quarter, I had settled down, and boom, I played my ass off that day. had a lot of tackles. They were committed to running the ball up the middle. They had more yards rushing in the first quarter than they had the rest of the game. You know, so you make in-game adjustments. I got a game ball for that one, too, sitting in my basement. Look at it every once in a while. Pet it.
Got it.
Hello, little game ball. I remember how good you played, man. It's so good. I rub it up against my thigh a little bit just to make me feel good. Yeah.
We're still talking about the ball, right?
Still talking about
Okay. I got nervous there. What was the moment?
Yeah, but it was never one guy I had success against. It was just sometimes you had success that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there anybody who you knew their techniques well enough where you were like, okay, I know how to play this guy?
So that game against Oakland that I talked about, Don Mosbar was the center out of USC. It was a first-round draft choice by the Raiders. Oh, probably out of 83. That famous 83 draft. And this is 93. So he's getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
Well, I could see Hosteller's hand separate under his legs because he's 6'7". I'm 6'2".
He was so tall, you could see.
I'll let you watch the game. It's available on the YouTube, on the YouTube channels.
Oh, on the YouTubes. We'll
you
check it
check out the YouTube and look at me get off the football compared to everybody else on that field and ask yourself, am I that fast? No, I wasn't that fast. What did I see? I could see Hosteller's hands the whole time. I mean, it was right in front of me. I couldn't help but notice it. It was there. Hosteller, boom. And guess what? When we knocked Hosteller out of the game and Vince Evans came out of the game, guess what I saw again? Boom. Boom. Right before the snap. I look like Speed Racer out there. Andale, arriba. I look like Speedy Gonzalez.
Did you then run to the podium and tell everybody what you saw?
I told you now. What is it, 93?
Yeah.
So we're talking 41 years later or 31 years later. I'm telling you exactly what happened in that game.
I love it.
And I got it. And then sometimes we did a lot of research on audibles. And we had Buffalo's audibles. And if you look at me playing against Kent Hull in Buffalo, you'd look at me and say, you'd have thought I was a Pro Bowler. I wasn't, but I knew what they were going to run. And when you know what they're going to run, it's a little bit different. It's
a little easier for you.
I become a whole lot better.
Oh, boy.
When I know what you're going to do. And most of the times, it's you kind of know what they don't do, depending upon personnel, down and distance, formation, and motion. You can kind of take things and eliminate them, but you can't really say this is what they're going to do exactly. But when you have their audibles and you have their live color and what they like to run and what they go with, because they can't make it overcomplicated. If they overcomplicate things, it becomes a problem for their own offensive line to get the calls down. So it's always got to be simple, you know, and they know it, you know, they know it. And then sometimes you can sit and you can see what they're doing. Then all of a sudden, you know it. Yeah.
Dominant times. Let's finish it off with this because you have a very big radio show to do.
Yeah.
Got a very big radio show to do.
Theoretically.
What was the moment in the NFL that you looked yourself in the mirror and was like, I think the time might be coming to an end?
Oh, well, that was easy. We were playing Carolina and I tore my hamstring off my pelvis. And I walked off the field that day, but I knew I was screwed and I had surgery. But I didn't let myself think that I was never going to play again because I had to go through surgery.
I had to rehab the injury.
I had to sit dormant for 6-7 weeks. I had to then rehab for the next two and a half months, next 10 weeks, like I was going to be able to come back. And I knew it was going to be tough to be able to bear weight on what was happening back there, but I wanted to get in the best shape I possibly could.
Yeah.
And then when Cleveland called me in, it was Chris Palmer, it was Carmen Policy, Dwight Clark. And they're sitting in there and they're giving me the old, you know, well, you know, sometimes you got to think about this and think about that. I said, listen, fellas, I get it. I go, I'm 32 years old.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
32, going to be 33 this year. 32 years old. I played 10 years in the league. I just had a catastrophic hamstring injury where the tendon ripped off the bone and had to be, they drilled holes in my hip and they sutured the tendon back, the semitendinosus. I just sat like a flamingo for the better part of 6 weeks. I've rehabbed the injury. I'm back to being somewhat healthy, and I'm happy about that. I got 2 years left on my deal, which don't mean anything in the NFL because contracts aren't guaranteed.
Right.
But I know that I've got injury protection in the back. Your career ends with a surgical procedure. You're allowed to have injury protection for 1 year. So I sat there, and I told him, I go, fellas, listen, I know what you're saying. I know what you're telling me to do. I know what you're thinking about it. Oh, I had a hell of a run. I said, I wish I could be here to help you guys now take that next step. You know, going from being that expansion team to a team that's going to be able to compete ultimately in the playoffs. I probably won't be able to do that with you guys, at least on the field. You know, I was angling maybe for a little bit of a coaching
trying to get in on a coaching gig. They weren't.
But I didn't want to move my family all over God's green earth because we had moved four times already. So I said, I understand. I said, what you guys are going to do is you're going to release me injured. I'm going to retire. I'm going to file for injury protection. And that's the direction we're going to go. I said, gentlemen, I thank you for the opportunity. I said, I'm sorry. I wish it could have worked out better for us. Coach Palmer was with me in Jacksonville. I thanked him very much for the opportunity to come on up. Dwight Clark, well, I mean, fucking the catch. I mean, Jesus, you know. And Carmen Policy.
Yeah.
And Carmen, was it Carmen or Eddie DiBartolo? I think it was Carmen Policy. It was Carmen. And I thanked all those guys, and I wished them luck. I told them that they got some good players on this. I said, but you got a lot of guys that are kind of marginal. I said, you got to bring it up. I said, not only do you need it from the top, I go, but your worst players are too bad. They're not good. They shouldn't be on an NFL roster. Right. You need to bring that bottom up to a certain level because you got a lot of guys on this team that shouldn't be in the NFL. And it was the expansion year, and they got screwed. They didn't give them the extra first-round pick. So we talked about that last week. So they had seven extra guys in there that were young. They got good guys, and they had good guys from that team that ended up playing for another 5, 6, 7 years and had 8 to 10-year careers. Dale McCutcheon, Wally Rainier, Kevin Johnson was a wide receiver. Shiverini's brother, Darren Shiverini, was a wide receiver out of Syracuse for us that played for an extended period of time. So they had some good players. Tim Couch, their first pick as a quarterback, it just wasn't good enough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Tim Couch a good quarterback. Yeah. Maybe in another system with better players, he might have been able to flourish. But they're hoping to bring the young wide receivers up with them and get the whole thing going. But it didn't work that way. Then Butch Davis got in there, got him to a playoff with, I think, Derek Johnson, who was the quarterback. Derek something or another, I don't know. But Johnson, Derek Johnson or something, and had some success with him. But ultimately,
Derek Anderson?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those guys. Derek something or another was down there. And they went to the playoffs, like in 2005. So, I mean, good for those guys for being able to get into the playoffs. But, yeah, I was done. I was done. I knew it. And then I was going to start my media career.
And it has worked out dominantly.
Conquer the world.
Dominantly.
And the first thing I did was arena football.
It's not bad.
Eli Gold, Jill Arrington, TNN. I was doing color commentary. And I sat in the offices in Chicago, and the head guy, the rules guy, we went over film and footage, and he taught me the whole thing in about 4 or 5 hours. Yeah, good players. A lot of guys I knew from the NFL were playing in the Arena League. Corey Mayfield. I remember a lot
Arena League was fun. I ain't going to lie. They brought it back when I was like 05, 06, 07.
Yeah, well, that's when the Chicago Rush were going strong. Barron, Bob McMillan, John Moyer.
Yeah.
We had some skilled players.
I remember seeing it and being like, good Lord.
I used to do the show at Mike Hohensie here.
Oh,
the Chicago Rush show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Me and Mike Hohensie, it was one of the first shows I did. And then Matt Alexander, I hosted a show with Matt Alexander. Chicagoland Speedway was a big sponsor. So we did a half hour show at 7 to 7:30 on, Tuesday, Thursday nights. Didn't matter. We had a good time doing it.
What a different time.
Yeah.
When you were getting full on coverage on Arena League football. Yeah. Now it's like the Windy City Bulls are playing on YouTube at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I did 2 weeks in Europe for Fox.
Yeah.
For when they still had teams in Barcelona, Rhine, Germany. Yeah. So I did 2 weeks out there. I did six games for Fox in the NFL, including the Atlanta Chicago game when Brian Urlacher was a rookie.
Ooh.
Yeah. I did
solid game.
Minnesota. New Orleans, down in New Orleans, where Randy Moss scored a game-winning touchdown at the end. I did Carolina, New Orleans in Carolina. I had a fun time. We had good times.
I love it, man. You got to get out of here. Appreciate you guys tuning in and showing love. Hit the like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Yerk's going nuts in here. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. One love, Bear Down. Peace.